Hey everyone, this is going to be a special episode done by Nick Olson and Chalk is Cheap, where he brought on myself just to chat about pool and my life in pool and all that good stuff. So I figured I would release it as an episode if you were interested. If you like what you hear with this podcast, you can always go over and subscribe to his podcast on just about all major podcast forums. So if you're listening to this on anything but Podbean, it probably will have it on there too, and it's called Chalk is Cheap. So check it out. And without further ado, here's the episode.
Getting through the winter in the Twin Ports can be tough, but it's especially tough on your vehicles inside and out. So after winter's over, it's a great idea to have your car professionally detailed. And I know what you're thinking. You got to call, make the appointment, make arrangements to drop your vehicle off. Who's going to pick you up? Who's going to bring you back? That process can be a strenuous one. But I have an answer for you. Detail and Dash. The only Twin Ports detailer that comes to you so you don't have to go to them. Their mobile unit is convenient and their fast service does not sacrifice quality. You tell them what you want and they get it done at your convenience. How much easier could it be? It's time to clean that car of yours up by calling Detail and Dash at 218-591-7005. That's 218-591-7005. Or you can visit detailingdoneyourway.com. That's detailingdoneyourway.com to book an appointment online. So quit stalling and experience detailing done your way.
There's nothing better than good old-fashioned barbecue. But in the Twin Ports, the problem has been nowhere to go to get it. Well, that problem is just about over because the time is near for Hog Wild Barbecue and Smokehouse to open up in Solent Springs, Wisconsin. Your new home for everything barbecue and a new location to find Kim's world-famous Bloody Marys. Stay tuned for updates on Hog Wild's Facebook page, and in the meantime, click the link in their feed to buy yourself some Hog Wild gear. It's almost time to get Hog Wild at Hog Wild Barbecue and Smokehouse in Solent Springs, Wisconsin.
I used to hang out down at Jack's Pool Hall. You go down there and don't do nothing at all. You wanted to play some cards, there was a game in the back. If you wanted a shot or something, you went out to Jack. If you had a little money, you was a grade A fool. There was a guy down there who used to shoot a little pool. Rack 'em up. Rack 'em up.
Welcome to Chalk is Cheap, your Twin Ports pool podcast. I am your host, Nick Olson, and I am coming to you from the Forward Mile Sports Memorabilia Studio, the local sports memorabilia company that brings the players you want at a price you can afford. And welcome to a special bonus edition of Chalk is Cheap, because this is not episode 10 that will be featured in a couple days here on our podcast feed. This is a bonus episode in which I bring you a conversation that I had with Nate Mindum, who happens to be the other half of the original co-hosts of Cue It Up Podcasts. And I thought it was only fitting after on episode 9, Twin Ports legend Rob Hovick joined the show, and he is a co-host of that show. So it was only fitting to have Nate on the show and bring you that in a form of a bonus episode, because of course he doesn't fit into the Twin Ports legend series of interviews and conversations that we're having right now, but I knew it would be a compelling conversation for you, the listener, and so we're bringing that to you here on this bonus episode of Chalk is Cheap. And with that being said, let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to my conversation that I had with Nate Mindum. All right, I'm here with Nate Mindum on the Chalk is Cheap podcast. How are you, Nate?
I'm living the dream. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing really good. I'm glad you could join me today. I know you've got yourself quite the busy schedule between your podcast and your latest event and everything going on. And so, again, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I just found out about your podcast a couple weeks ago. Rob Hovick, who doesn't listen to any podcasts ever and is very proud to say that, I might add. I got on a call with him and he told me that you were doing a podcast and I'd never met you before. I'd actually never even heard of you before. And he told me about it and I went and checked it out and I ended up binge listening to, I think we got off the phone that night about 10 o'clock at night. And I ended up listening to all three of your episodes that you had out at the time. And I think I went to bed that night at about 2:30. It's a good podcast. It's fun to listen to.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, and you and I've had this conversation before, but it's just one of those things, like you said, where every pool player's got a story, and most pool players that have played for a long period of time, they've got, you know, the old pool hall stories, or they've got gambling stories, or they've got something cool to share that people really seem to like listening to. So that's kind of the basis of the show. And I think it's taken off a lot more than I ever thought it would. It was just an idea that I kicked around 4 or 5 years ago, because especially in the state of Wisconsin, as you know, there's a really rich history of pool. And if you magnified it down to the Twin Ports area, Duluth and Superior, there's a lot of good pool players and a lot of good history as far as the game goes. So I think it's fitting. And it was something that was needed to tell some of the stories of these great players in the area.
Not only that area, but I mean the country itself. And I tried to do my best to help you out along the way, give you some advice of stuff that I went through in the beginning to really help you set yourself up for success in the future. And part of that is just because what you're doing, it's absolutely needed in pool. I mean, every other sport that you see out there, there's always a dozen talk shows where, you know, professional athletes will come on and they'll talk about their lives and what they had to endure coming up through the ranks, or, you know, things that they do in the community. There's a bunch of different media types out there, and pool has just about nothing. So I'm trying to help you out in any sort of way I can to really give you that platform needed to get out to eventually more of a national, broadcast if you wanted to have that.
Yeah, no, I really do appreciate that. And speaking of the journey that you kind of went on with your show, for those of our listeners that don't know, you're the host of Cue It Up Podcast. And it's really started to take off, especially here recently. And in May of 2019, you had a shout out by editor Mike Howerton of the Billiards Buzz that he told everybody to go check out your show and how much he liked it. So just tell me how it came to be for you. How did you get into the podcast world and how did your show come to fruition?
Yeah, so I launched actually on April 1st of last year, and I never even realized it. That's April Fool's Day. And I never realized this. And then somebody reached out to me, actually, the day I dropped my quote-unquote real first podcast. I did one that basically said what I was going to be doing. And then I did a real podcast drop on April 1st. And somebody reached out to me that day, and he's like, oh, you're actually doing the podcast? I thought you were releasing on April 1st to do this long, elaborate joke. And I never realized it. But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of funny, right? I guess to go back to the beginning and the reason for doing the podcast, pool has always had a void, right? Let's put it this way. How do you know what happened last weekend? Well, these are the things that you can do. You can go on Facebook and you can start following professional players and hope that those professional players are at that pool tournament and did something to let them know. Maybe they posted a bracket. Some of the better social media savvy people, Chris Robinson comes to mind right away. They post how they do as they're going through the events. Niels Fine is also somebody who does great at that. You could basically do that. You could follow professional players. You could go on AZ Billiards and you could read through hundreds of forums of people asking basically what tips do you use, what shaft diameter, what weight do you play. You know, the forums on AZ Billiards just drive me crazy. I mean, how many times can we belittle, just completely destroy the question of what equipment do you use? Anyways, that's just a sidetrack.
Yeah.
You could follow tournament directors. So tournament directors generally do that. But the point is, you have to really put a lot of work and effort into following the events. And that's on the national level. Now, if you were to look at something like football, NFL football, you did a podcast in the past with fantasy football. And you're one of maybe 1,000 fantasy football podcasts throughout the country. I mean, they're all over the place, right?
Right.
Some are better than others. Some are, you know, more insightful talking about players, teams, something like that. But the idea is there's hundreds of these different podcasts where you can go and you can have a community around what you're doing. Pool has none of that, whether it's podcasts, whether it's people, shows on ESPN, whether it's people just sitting around talking at the lunch table. I mean, there's almost no forum surrounding pool where you can get the information needed. Now, the inspiration for it, I was at Moscone Cup last year. Last year, back in when it was in London. And I was over there for the event. And, of course, anybody that goes to the Moscone Cup, you get fired up. I mean, I came back thinking that, oh, my God, I'm going to be the best player in the world someday. I'm going to practice. I'm going to get on this Moscone Cup because this is just what I need to do. I mean, everybody that goes to the Moscone Cup for the first time leaves super pumped up and super passionate about pool. Well, a week later, reality set in. I hit a couple balls and remember how bad I was. So that dream went bye-bye pretty fast. But the fire around it, right? The fire around the Moscone Cup never really left. Just the goals started changing. So then I was in a pool hall, the Rock Sports Bar and Grill in Madison. And I was talking with some buddies, and I was talking about this tournament that had just happened this previous week. And I was watching a match between, and I blank on the second player, but it was Rob Saez. And I always go back to Oscar Dominguez, but I don't think it was Oscar Dominguez. I just think that for whatever reason, I think it is. But I know Rob Saez was one of them. And I know he was one of them because I had a conversation with somebody about him. And I'm like, you know, talking about this match that involved Rob Saez. And the guy's like, who's Rob Saez? I'm like, how? Really? Seriously? You don't know who Rob Saez is? And the guy's like, I have no idea who that is. And I kind of looked over to the table next to us. I'm like, do you know who Rob Saez is? And there's two people playing. And the person shooting says no. And the person sitting, he's like, I think I've heard of him. Is he some guy from Florida? And then I asked the table on the other side of us, and one of them knew who he was. And then the other one had no idea. So basically, so anybody that doesn't know Rob Saez, he's like a 755, 760 professional player from Texas. He's from Louisiana now. He's living in Louisiana now. And he's just a super nice guy and just a crazy talented pool player. And nobody knew who he was. And I kind of sat there and I'm like, if we don't even know who, because Rob Saez, I believe, is a top 20 player in the country. If we don't even know who the top 20 players in the country are, like, we're in a pretty tough spot as pool players to right. Where, you know, how can you follow your favorite players if you don't even know who they are? We don't know who these players are. Like, we know Sky Woodward, and we know Shane Van Boning, and we know Tyler Steyer, and we know, you know, Justin Berg. We know these players that are in the Moscone Cup every single year. But once you leave that, you know nobody. I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, Nick, but I mean, how many pool players do you think you can name that are professional players touring?
It's under 20, without a doubt.
Yeah, and how many NFL players can you name?
I could probably name 200.
You could probably name the roster for about six different teams, right?
Right, right.
The conclusion that I came to is that how can you follow and support and love a sport that you know nothing about? Mm-hmm. And being it was a perfect combination between having this fire from coming back from the Moscone Cup and wanting to see the game grow and having this realization that I guess was kind of the inspiration for the podcast. And that's a really, really long way of putting it, but the motivation behind it.
You know, it's funny you say that because I just had a conversation, episode 8 with Jeff Shaleen. We talked and I said the same thing to him because he's somebody that I know is more of a student of the game, follows the professional rankings and different stuff like that. And he's really into the Moscone Cup and everything. And I just brought up to him the fact that, you know, why is it with pool that you can have somebody who really loves the game, plays 3, 4, 5 times a week, but you ask them who the number one player in the world is and they have no idea. And I don't think it's that they don't care to know. I think it's to your point that there's just no coverage. There's no, absolutely no coverage because you can't tell me that somebody who loves pool that much, if they had an ability and a chance to watch and follow it, that they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. And I guess to take off of that, I find it even more dangerous than that. When people say who's the number one player in the world, the people that say, I don't know, those are the people that, you know, that's fine. Those are the people that they just don't know. The people who are saying, you know, Shane Van Boning, or, you know, I've heard Earl Strickland before, where you're living in a different era of pool. That to me, I find so much more dangerous than the people that just don't know, because you're living in a world's past. I mean, there are so many exciting things that are happening in the world of pool right now. And maybe it's just because I'm covering and I'm following it every single day, so I see all of these little nuances, but there are so many things happening. And if you're saying Shane Van Boning, you're stuck in like 2013, you know, 2007 to 2013. Don't get me wrong. Shane Van Boning is still an amazing pool player, but he's not number one in the world. And I think that anybody that just follows pool very closely will say that. Now, if you want to say he's going to be the best gambler, you have an argument to be made there, because that dude just, and part of it, I don't want to get into this, but he doesn't book losers, right? He's at a place in his life where he's very financially set up. He's done very well for himself, and he's done great investments to set himself up. So there's no reason for him to take a loser, but he kills everybody he plays in a race to 100. I mean, he just crushes everybody. So it's, you want to make that argument, you might be able to get away with it. I mean, you might be true, but to go back to your broader point of, you just don't know. You just don't know what's going on in the world of pool unless you really follow it at a crazy devoted level.
To that point, I think that could be why, you know, especially with your podcast, the way it's just soared in popularity, especially recently, and then, you know, mine on a much lower scale, but I'm just getting started, and it seems like every week it's starting to gain more and more traction. And like I said, there's just no other outlet for people to get pool information. And the fact of, you know, I have listeners from all over the country, and like you said, they're not from the area, this area that I'm broadcasting from, but the fact that it's about pool makes people want to listen. So I think it, you know, the whole concept here of what we're saying really has some value there. And, you know, speaking of your show, and most recently you just finished up your latest project of the Cue It Up Cup 2, which took place May 28th through the 31st. And you've already mentioned some of the players that participated, but you had the likes of Jason Shaw, Darren Appleton, Jen Beretta, Rodney Morris, and others. And it just a star studded cast, and you guys put on a really good show. And again, I just want to say thanks for letting this show be just a tiny little bit of part of that. It was really cool to see the logo and different things on there. But talk to me about that Cue It Up Cup concept, because this is the second event. You had the first event earlier on in the month, and they were both widely successful. And I just think it's really cool. How did you come in contact with all these players and kind of get everybody on board for this event?
So I have the luxury of growing up and playing with Tyler Steyer, of course, and Skylar Woodward and I are just about the same age. I think he's 26 right now, and I'm 28. So we never matched up when we were young, as far as like in tournaments or like junior nationals or anything like that. But we were aware of each other. But I've just made little connections throughout, I guess, doing this podcast, and to a lesser degree before that, but especially since the podcast was made. So Rodney Morris and I would say are pretty good friends at this point. We're, you know, to the point where we call each other and talk about something probably once a week. Johnny Archer and I are now boys. We basically have been talking every single day since like 2 weeks ago. Either he calls me or I call him once a day, and we just chat about stuff. Usually we talk for a reason to start it out, but then we'll just sit there and chat for about 10 minutes, and he's really an interesting guy. Every single time I call him, he answers with, "Nate Snake. What's good, Nate Snake?" every time he says it, I just start laughing. But then I guess players like Jennifer Beretta, I met her this year at WSBA. She was actually at my booth, so they needed a pool table for her to do her, I guess, little challenge matches where people just came up and paid $5 or $10 and they played against her, and then she signed a ball for them and off they went. So I got to hang out with her there, and then I've developed, I would say, a pretty good friendship with her since, to the point where, you know, we can chat, and where she's actually going to join my group for the Moscone Cup this year. I'm going to start putting together a Cue It Up, I guess, section of the crowd, and Jennifer Brett is going to join us this year for it. So that's pretty cool. But then, you know, I've made a bunch of European connections, mostly with Jim Telfer. And then he put me in contact, of course, with Darren. He was in the first one. So now I've developed a pretty good relationship with Darren. Of course, Margaret, she was in the first one. I've developed a good relationship with her. And basically, I have little ins with all of these people. And then as long as you treat them as a human being, because of course they're a human being first. And it's great that you are star-studded by them and that, you know, that you kind of put them up on a pedestal. But if you just treat them as a human being and you act like you belong, like you're not, I guess, doing weird things like breathing heavily while you're talking to them, because you always have that person that's talking to their hero and they're, you know, some weird stuff like that. If you treat them as if they're a human being and you have a reason to chat with them and you're not just using your platform or your connection with them to talk to them for no reason. I mean, they're human beings. They're people. They're phenomenal pool players and they're absolute monsters on the table, but first and foremost, they're human beings. And if you treat them as such and you treat them with respect, a friendship might blossom from it. And next thing you know, I mean, you're talking as friends, less as, you know, you're talking as friends as opposed to talking about star and their, you know, the people looking up to them. So I guess, so then when you go to them with requests, so I can go to Jennifer Beretta now and I'll shoot her a call or I'll send her a text message and I'll say, hey, do you want to play in Cue It Up Cup Part 2? She responds in 3.6 seconds. Absolutely. And that's the end of it. I can reach out now to Sky and I can send him a text message and say, hey, were you interested in this? And he was a little bit more skeptical because he didn't have a table and he didn't know if he'd have one. But by the end of it, he's like, yeah, let's do it. It sounds like fun. But basically the moral of the story is as long as you treat these people with respect and, you know, treat them as they would want to be treated, you know, they're willing to do a lot of these things because they're fun things to do.
That's the biggest thing. They're human beings. I think a lot of times people forget about that, especially when they're somebody they idolize or put up on a pedestal. Like you said, as long as you treat somebody with respect, they're going to treat you with respect in return.
I want to tell you a story of what happens when you don't do that. I made an absolute butt of myself this year at the Moscone Cup, and I actually haven't even talked to him yet. I need to, and I'm so embarrassed that I can't even do it. But so I met Jason Shaw. I met Jason Shaw 2 years ago, and I chatted with him for a little while. And then I met him again this year at the VIP after party, so at the Moscone Cup in Vegas. So basically, there's at the end of the event, there's a little VIP section. They let about 50 to 100 people in there, and you don't get in unless you have a reason to be there, basically. And I was in there, and I was chatting with, or, you know, I walked into there, and basically Jason Shaw was there, and I said, hey, Jason, and I shook his hand, and I said, congratulations, right after they lost the Moscone Cup. And I did that because I was so starstruck. Like, I'm a huge fan of Jason Shaw. So Jason Shaw last year kind of played the bad guy role for USA fans. He was kind of hamming it up. He was jumping up on the, you know, that was the quote, the king's chair that Tyler had. You don't, he jumped on Shane's chair. You don't jump on the king's chair. I actually use that as an introduction for my podcast for some episodes. But Jason Shaw won a match against Shane Van Boning, and then he jumped up on his chair and kind of like, look at me to the U.S. fans. And the U.S. fans just hated it, and they just hated him basically because of that, in the same way that they hated Joshua Filler this year. But what people don't realize is the Moscone Cup, while, yes, it's a very, very serious pool event, it's a production. It's a show. It's no different than the stuff that goes on in like a WWE event. There's a match, but there's also a production that happened completely outside of the pool itself. And that's what makes it as big as it is. And you have to have somebody on both sides probably that hams it up and gets the crowd into it, because that's what makes the event so great. And Jason played that role last year. Joshua Filler played that role this year. So basically, I've loved Jason Shaw ever since he did that, because it's just such a great thing that he did. It got the U.S. fans involved in ways that it hasn't been involved in the past, especially since they won, of course. That helps as well. Getting the U.S. players involved when we actually win is nice, right? But I walked up to him, and I was completely starstruck. I actually was starstruck, and I just had a brain fart, and I just said, congratulations. And he's like, we lost, mate. What the hell? I can't say what he said next, but I apologized on the spot, and I don't even know if he recognized me. or remembers me from saying that. And I felt so bad and I felt so stupid, but that's the stuff that you just don't do. Moral of the story.
So that's really cool. And again, if you're listening and you haven't checked that out, I encourage you to go to the Cue It Up Podcast Facebook page and just scroll back a little ways. You'll see, you can watch the feed, you can watch the event back, some really good pool, and it's really interesting. And now as we record, you still have some drawings, some raffles that are happening, correct?
We had a bunch of sponsors. We ended up having, I think we had close to 20 sponsors, just under 20 sponsors. And one of the biggest prize, the most expensive prize, was a $1,500 Predator Icon pool cue. And a friend of mine, who's actually been on my podcast before, was the winner of that. And instead of taking it and being happy, he decided to donate it back to the players. And he donated it back so that they could raise more money for the players. And I thought that was just, I mean, his name's Chad Shoulders, so I should give that. And so we're going to basically, and this happened on day three. So a couple people followed suit and donated some stuff back. And the money that was raised from the donations of the podcast or the Cue It Up Cup is going to the players. I'm taking a little bit out of it to run the event and stuff like that. But the vast, vast majority, about 90% of the money is going to the players. Over 90% of the money is going to the players. So basically, I guess, yeah, we have a bunch of stuff that was donated back. We're going to run a bonus raffle, and then the players are all – most of the players are actually signing something or giving away some memorabilia that's signed to do as another raffle. So we're actually doing two more raffles.
Yeah, that's very cool. So if you're interested in something like that and some signed memorabilia or some of the stuff that was donated back, including that amazing Predator pool cue, again, go to the Cue It Up podcast page and you'll find that post and you can figure out how to donate, how to make a donation, how to enter in that second chance raffle. Very cool. The event is really something, and I think, and I don't want to burst your bubble here at all, but I think there was a little bit of a spoiler in your last video that you guys may be planning a third event. Am I ahead of the game here a little bit, or?
Yeah. So I'm at a weird point in my life where I guess I graduated college this past semester for the second time, and I'm going to be probably entering out into the job market. I've given a pretty good effort to doing the podcast full time. I've tried to raise enough money basically to be able to make it sustainable, and I just can't do it. There's not enough there that I can do this full time basically. So that's going to throw a wrinkle into these things because these events take an insane amount of time. I don't want to be that guy that just complains about, you know, everything that I do for the pool community and blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of promoters that do stuff like that where they just talk about how much you give to the game and say that people need to give to you because you give so much. I'm not being one of those promoters, but I think it's an interesting thing to give an idea as to how much time these events actually take. And so basically for about the week before to even to this day, I'm still working on stuff for the event. I calculated it up yesterday. I think I had about 145 hours into this event in about a week and 2 days.
Wow.
They're not easy events to do. They're fun. They're absolutely a blast to do, but the amount of work that goes into doing them is crazy. Now I'm getting more efficient at doing it. I'm finding shortcuts, stuff like that. But I guess the point is they take a lot of time. And if I do end up getting a job anytime soon, it's just not going to be feasible. Now, with that being said, we do have a couple of really, really neat ideas that I think Jim and I are interested in doing. We will not be doing an event similar to the Moscone Cup anymore, where there's five players or anything like that. I think that we're going to leave that to the professionals. The Moscone Cup format is good enough as is. We're going to try and find something new to do. And we have a couple of ideas. I don't know how many sneak peeks I can give, but
sure.
We're thinking about doing a draft style event
where we
not only draft the players, we draft how the players are chosen. So
very nice.
For example, we might be doing some sort of game or something like that where the winner of it actually gets to pick, and they get to pick their country in the world. And then you pick your players in that country. And then So if I were to win, maybe I want to choose Austria. And then I choose Mario He, Albin Ocean, and Max Leishman. And then that's my team. It might be a three-person team, might be a two-person team, might be a six-person team, whatever it is, whatever we decide to do. It's going to be maybe something like that, and then we'll do an event based off of that. So that's kind of what we had chatted about. I think it's a pretty fun format. I think it should be interesting. But that's all predicated off of what I said earlier.
Really cool. I think that gives us something to look forward to there with your show as well. Besides the fact, you know, you and I talked about before we got on the air here on the episode, before we started recording, we talked about how just the process of editing a podcast alone. I mean, for example, you take a 2-hour episode, you know, on my or your show. And if you're the guy that's doing the editing, it can take you upwards of 3 to 4 times that. Just in editing before all the other stuff. And that doesn't count, you know, promotion on social media. That doesn't count writing the description and all the other stuff that goes along with doing something like this. So then you multiply that on top of with an event like you did. I mean, it's a lot more time than people realize.
So I think I've done enough to whine about my work. I'm going to take this question and I'm going to twist it to basically work towards you.
right.
And it'll make sense once I say it. I have it easy. As a podcaster, I have it easy because all I do is talk about what's happening in pool. And yes, Demetrius Gelatis, Rob Hovick, and myself, the hosts of the podcast, we talk about things that help you get better. So we'll talk about techniques. We'll talk about strategies. We'll talk about different maybe systems that we use. But at the end of the day, we're basically just talking about pool and what's happening in the world of pool. You, on the other hand, you bring people on, and it's very, very hard. So this is why people like, and I hate getting compared to them, so I don't even know why I'm bringing it up, but I have to now. People like Joe Rogan are so, so good because he's able to get the best out of the people that he brings onto the podcast. He is a master at interviewing people. I don't interview. I do interview some people that come onto the podcast for other stuff, but it's usually with the direction, right? When you bring people on, you're basically talking to people, hoping that they give you some gold in the rough type of story that you could then kind of morph down with some editing and some producing to being a really, really, really cool pool story. You don't have this golden road that you can follow to get you to exactly where that is. You basically just bring people on and talk to them. Well, some people it's very easy to get out of. People like Rodney Morris, people like John Schmidt, they've been on my podcast in the past, and you basically ask them how their day is, and next thing you know, they're giving you the five greatest pool stories that ever happened in the entire history of pool. I mean, they're so easy to interview.
But best then you case can bring scenario for a podcast like, host.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But then you can bring on somebody like Tyler Steyer or Chris Robinson, who I've also had on my podcast, and you ask them how their day went, and they answer with good. And you say, what's your next event? They say, Turning Stone. And then you say, you know, who's the biggest influence to your game? My dad. You know, they're very interesting people to talk to in one-on-one, but they don't interview the best is basically what I'm getting at. They're very insightful. They're very smart. It's like pulling teeth to get it out of them, right? That's what you have to deal with all the time. So even more – so basically what I'm trying to get at here is, yes, you said it might take 4 or 5 minutes of work per 1 minute of audio. That's all the stuff that nobody ever sees. So when you're actually listening to a podcast like this and you hear what the finished product is, you don't actually know what goes on. So sometimes if you really like an episode and you see a social media post out there that, hey, what's your favorite part of this episode? Take 5 seconds, take 10 seconds. The feedback that you get as a podcaster is worth the price of admission, generally speaking, when you have people engage with it and they want to be part of it and they want to build a community around the stuff that they're listening to. So I would say to all your fans out there that are listening to your podcast, if they're out there on social media and they see one of your posts and it's asking a question, there is so much work that goes into doing a podcast. Take the time and support it. Even if it's just answering a question or buying a sticker or maybe buying a T-shirt or something like that. I know that I probably – Rob Hovick likes to make fun of me all the time for this. because that's just the cynical person that he is. When Rob and I will have a conversation on the podcast, and at the end of it, if we hang out and talk, he's like, well, good job, Nate. You just made, what do you think, about 37 cents by doing this podcast? And the joke is, with how much time I put into the podcast, I average somewhere between 20 and 30 cents an hour, something like that. So if we shoot an hour and a half podcast, I just made myself 30 cents. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Those are it's the small things that, as the consumer, because you're putting this out there for somebody, and this is a really long-winded answer, but I hope that it gives people maybe a little more insight into what you do and how involved it actually is, and how little things that they could do, just liking a post or answering a question, hey, what was your favorite part of this podcast? It makes it all worth it. Or at least it does for me.
Yep. Yep, I would 100% agree. I mean, I can't tell you how many times where, you know, some of those, like you mentioned, those poll questions, you know, what was your favorite part of this conversation or whatever it may be, and somebody actually takes the time and writes an answer. Again, it's sort of like validation as far as, you know what, somebody's really consuming this and they're enjoying it. And that's really, you know, the goal of what we're doing here. And in comparison, you know, when I did my other show, Coach and Cole show, and my fantasy football shows, you know, we had a ton of listeners, and you look at the numbers and it's like, wow, I just can't believe how many people are listening to this, but we had absolutely no feedback. So there was hardly ever would we get anybody who actually, you know, made a comment or reached out as far as feedback on social media. So after a while it was like, well, what are we doing this for? You know, you'd get that attitude. And at least, you know, and I think the pool community in by and large is more tight knit and they're more supportive. And so my experience thus far has been, you know, the listeners of this show have been much more apt to respond or share something or do something, which has been really cool. But you're right. You know, just taking the time to like something, you know, sharing it really, really gets it going, because now you're, you know, that's like seeing dollar signs when somebody actually shares a post, because now, you know, there might only be 30 more people that see it. But still, it's 30 more people that didn't see it before. So anything you can do like that to support a podcast or a show that you like is definitely something that you should do for sure. Because, again, like we're saying here, you know, there's a lot of work behind the scenes that nobody ever sees. What I want to do here, Nate, is I want to turn back the clock here a little bit, because we've talked a lot about your show. We talked about some of the recent events and stuff like that.
Let me chop you off real quick. There's one more thing that I do want to address there. And
yeah.
So this is a little story from the Moscone Cup back in Vegas. And this is the stuff that can happen if basically you just do these small things. So when I got out to Moscone, and for anybody that knows me, you know how terrible I am at social media. I absolutely hate it. But so basically a listener reached out to my Twitter, and he had done it about two or three times leading up to the Moscone Cup, because he knew I was going to be out there because he listened to the podcast and he wanted to meet me. Right. And he wanted to hang out and stuff like that. And I loved it. Right. Well, I show up to the bar at Griff's, which is it's a kind of a famous pool hall in Las Vegas. And I go up to order a drink, and I literally just walked in. We just got off of our flight. We got to the hotel, we dropped our stuff off, and then we went straight to Griff's. I'd been in Vegas for maybe an hour and a half. And I walk up to the bar, and I order a drink. And the guy next to me, I just found a nice little spot in the bar. The guy next to me, he turns around, he's like, holy shit, you're Nate Mindum. And I'm like, whoa. You know, I thought he was going to, like, beat me up or something like that. He's like, I listened to your podcast. I absolutely love it. And he's like, I got this drink. And basically by the end of it, he ended up buying me like seven drinks. I tried to buy drinks for him. He wouldn't let me. The point is, or the broader point is, if you help get this out, you can then take that interaction that Nick, that person had with me, you can have that with Nick. And then what I did was I built a small community out there in Vegas. And actually it was even cool, because not only did I meet that fan there that just recognized my voice from the podcast, I could look out into the crowd and I saw two queued up t-shirts. I had no idea who they were. I'd never seen those people in my entire life before. I showed up the next day to the Moscone Cup, and I could see at one point in time, seven queued up t-shirts around the crowd. And I only knew who four of them were. So there's three other people that were different from the people at Griff's. And so basically what I'm getting at is I ended up getting to hang out with all of those people. We ended up having a night on Wednesday night where we just hung out, all of the people that were there, and we built a community. And now the people that were in that community, they're all friends on Facebook, and they all interact super hard with my posts, and they're really, really nice, and they all chat with all the rest of the people. And we're building a community within the podcast listeners. And you're basically, all you have to do is share stuff, partake in things that he does on Facebook. You're going to meet some of the best people that you've ever met before in your entire life, because they're out there. And there are a lot of, if you're listening to a pool podcast, I'm guessing most of your best friends are probably pool players, and some of the best people you've ever met are pool players. Help him build a community around this, and you're going to meet some of the best people you've ever met in your entire life. I just wanted to take that small tangent, because I think it's an important thing to do, and it shows what very small things can lead to bigger communities that you can get so much from.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And that's a really cool story that you were able that you went out there. You didn't know who this guy was, and he just says your name, and it's like, whoa, that's kind of had to be a surreal moment for you to just be there. And you're, you know, however many miles away from your home, and you're just thinking in your mind, well, I'm just doing this little podcast, and all of a sudden somebody in Las Vegas knows who you are. That's amazing.
Yeah, and his name is Morgan Lupton. He's from Nashville, Tennessee. And Cornelius Wilkins was another person that I met that night that was wearing a cute – he was actually the one that was in the Griff's – one of the people that was wearing the cute-up T-shirt. And I ended up hanging out with those two the entire night and a couple another Wednesday night too. And now they're both actually a Patreon supporters to my podcast, and they're support just about every single thing that I do with the podcast.
Very cool. That's very cool. Well, Nate, you know, we've talked a lot about your show. We've talked about the Cue It Up Cup. We've talked about a lot of things here as far as podcasting goes. But let's rewind the clock and go before all that started for both of us. And let's go back to 2012, actually, because if you look at some of your career accomplishments in pool, there's one little blip that I thought that stuck out to me that some pool players may not be familiar with or have maybe only heard of such a thing. And in 2012, you were the VNEA Junior Speed Pool Champion. Do I have that right?
I was, yeah. Actually, okay. that was back-to-back years. I was in 2011, I think, as well.
Okay, so 2011 and 2012 speed pool champion.
The first ever back-to-back speed pool VNEA Junior speed pool champion. Weird.
So for my listeners who have maybe only heard of speed pool, can you explain to them what speed pool is?
Yeah, so speed pool is you basically rack up 15 balls, and none of them have any significance over another. So they're just balls similar to straight pool. And you break the rack and run out as fast as you possibly can. And then however fast you run out, that's your time. And so what we did was we had a tournament there with, I think there were 16 players, anybody who wanted to sign up basically. And they were divisionalized as well. So if you were in, I was in the majors division, which is 18 to 21 at the time. And then there was a 14 to 17 and then 13 and below. So basically you played in your own division. And then the winners from each division played against each other in the finals, and the person that's under 13 got a free pass to the finals, and then the 17 or 14 to 17 played 18 to 21 to get to the finals to play against the 13 and below.
Okay, well, so there you have it. So the 15 balls, you shoot them in, you're timed, your lowest time, that's how you win. So that's pretty cool. I think I would enjoy playing that if I had the chance. And so you win it 2011 and 2012. And then the following year in Battle Creek, Michigan, you're the junior runner-up in 8-ball. So I guess what I'm getting at here is talk to me about playing in some of these V&A national tournaments and international tournaments and stuff as a junior and kind of what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, so I got the dates wrong. It would have been 2012 and 2013 then. I was thinking the last year I played was 2012.
Okay.
So I was a speed pool in 2012 and 2013. So I guess – It was weird, actually, because I had never really heard of them. I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. I had actually the town that I grew up in for the second part of my youth from basically like 13 on was a town of 46 people. It's called Excelsior. And, I mean, there was no bars. There was no businesses. It was literally nothing. The town I associated with was Boscobel, which was about 12 minutes away, and it had 2,700 people, I think, at the time. And I didn't really, I mean, I knew my community. I knew what happened in the, you know, the neighboring 30 miles or so. And it's a very rich community in Poole, or it was at the time. Now it's completely dried up just about for the most part. When I was a kid, we used to have, I want to say we had like 14 or 15 teams in this Thursday night league. And now last I heard there was 3 teams. So actually there's no Poole at all. The town is completely dried up for anything Poole.
Yeah.
But I guess moral of the story is, I just happened to come across somebody at a Poole tournament in Monroe, Wisconsin, at a place called Friendlies. And I was, how old was I? I was maybe 16 years old at the time. And it was one of the few bars around Wisconsin. Basically I would go to Poole tournaments where they would let me in. And so I played a lot out of lacrosse at Top Shots because I knew the owner at the time, his name was Art. He always let me in. The Helm bar in lacrosse as well. And Kyle Prentice was still is actually the owner of that. He used to let me in with a parent. So basically I would go anywhere around the greater Wisconsin area, basically wherever they'd let me in and play their Poole tournaments from ages like 11 to, well, 21 when I could get in there legally. But I just happened to run across somebody who had been playing his first Poole tournament in like 6 or 7 years or something like that. And he used to actually qualify players out of Madison, Wisconsin to be able to go to VNEA Junior Internationals. And he's like, he watched me play a match, and I had played against a match and just got my face kicked in. I think I'd lost like 5 or 6. I think the race was 6 on the winner's side and 5 on the loser's side. And I won my first match, and then I just got my face kicked in to somebody who can't make 3 balls in a row, but that day they found a way to. And I played terrible, and I just got crushed. And he comes up to me afterwards. He's like, that is some of the best shooting I've ever seen in my life from, you know, a 14-year-old kid. And I knew he was just lying and kind of fluffing my pillow because I knew 14-year-old players that were better than me. But, you know, it was nice and it was great. And then he's like, hey, come up here on this day. We're going to get you qualified for VNEA Junior Internationals. And there you go. Well, it actually never worked out to where I could do that. But the next year was like then I got in contact with him again. And I ended up qualifying, which is a big, big, big no-no because you're not supposed to be able to do it in one day, but don't tell anybody at VNEA. but I had to drive to Madison, which was an hour and a half drive for me. So it's like I can't go there for 8 weeks in a row. It just doesn't work that way, right? So I had just gotten my license recently. I was 16 years old at the time, and I was driving. And I drove up there one day, got qualified, and then ended up going. I think the first year I ended up having it was in Rochester, Minnesota. I believe it was Rochester, Minnesota. And I walk in there and I just like, whoa, I have no idea what's going on here. There's players from New Zealand, Spain, Canada, the U.S. And I think there was a team from Mexico that was there. And I was just completely out of my element. I had no idea where I was. I had no idea what I was doing. And it was a great event. I wish I knew about it earlier so I could have played in it when I was a little bit younger. Right. By the time that I played in it for the first time, I think I was 17 years old. So, but yeah, I mean, they're a great events. And if you have a junior kid, you got to get him involved in that or the BEF. I know that I actually drove out there all by myself. The story that you said, the time I got runner up, I actually got runner up to TJ Steinhaus. I'm kind of just rambling now, but I'm trying to get to a point. But so I played TJ Steinhaus in the finals, and I actually beat him for the chair. And then he comes back through and he beats me 4-1. I think it was race to 4-1 in the first set. In the second set, he ended up beating me on the hill. I think it was on the hill. But he had an entire crowd. So Minnesota traveled so crazy well for these. These were always in arenas, and he had like an entire section of the arena there cheering him on. So Minnesota used to bring 3 bus full of people to these events, whether they were the parents or the kids, 3 buses full of people. And every time I'd miss a ball, they'd start cheering. every time he'd win a game, every time he'd win a game, they'd start cheering. Anytime, so basically, I had three people in my two, because one of them actually left, and it was some of the closest people that I had ever met. They were like some of the best friends I made at the Junior Internationals, and they were actually from Minnesota, and they were family friends with TJ Steinhaus's parents. They just couldn't stand seeing me not have anybody. So they went over into my section of the crowd. So it was just those two, and the other section had probably 80 to 100 people in it. And they were the only people that were cheering me on. So I had no chance of winning that regardless, but I've never felt more, sad than that moment right there, where because my parents never were able to go to it. So I just basically hopped in a car and drove out there. But that was an interesting, it's hard to play under those conditions, and I was not mentally ready for it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I've had the conversation on the show many times about playing in big tournaments, and that's, you know, you're under the microscope there, especially when you've got 80 to 100 or even more, like you're saying, people that are essentially cheering against you. And to be, you know, 17 years old in that situation, that's a lot of weight to bear on your shoulders to play a pool match. There's no doubt.
It was a wild one. It was interesting, to say the least. But I guess to go to your original question, I was trying to give some stories of like what actually happened when I was there.
Yeah.
So hopefully that came across. But yeah, the BEF program, I know that I have problems with BEF and what it requires of their youth players. And I have a lot of questions about the way that VNEA works with their juniors as well. I mean, they really put a lot of burden on the families of the kids and the kids themselves, and then the families of the children as well. I wish there was a better way of doing it. Cause I mean, especially with like the Atlantic Cup challenge that they do, which is kind of the BEF's best of the best versus Europe's best of the best youth. It's kind of a junior Moscone Cup is essentially what it is. They basically tell the families, like, hey, your kid's in it. Find a way to shell out $4,000 for you and your kids to get over there to stay for a week to partake in this event. And it's at some point in time, it just seems like there's got to be more funding in it to help the families get their kids over there to actually partake in this, because it's just sad to see that some of these kids can't partake in this because they can't. You know, their families can't just shell out $5,000 to be able to afford this trip.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but with that being said, I mean, it's the best that we have available right now, right, is the BEF and the VNEA, and hopefully in the future someone's able to find out a way to either improve upon those or to, you know, create some new youth program to, you know, really help pool continue to grow in the future. Because if my small city is not city, it's my small town is any indication of where pool is going in the future, it's not a good place.
I hear you there. We're in the same situation here, Duluth Superior. There's nowhere for kids to go play. You know, even the youth centers, they don't have pool tables anymore. I think there's one maybe in the area that does. And so, yeah, it's tough. And again, with the lack of coverage and the lack of everything that surrounds pool, it's really tough. And, you know, my idea always was there's got to be a way to have some sort of junior league in an area, in a region, in somewhere that can just get sanctioned, just like an adult league would, and then that would qualify them to play in these events. I think that would be the easiest way, and maybe there's just not enough local, you know, interest as far as getting enough kids together for a league, but I think you'd have to build something like that over time in your community.
Yeah. And eventually it's got to come down to, you can't put the financial burden on the children to be able
right.
to, you can't ask an 8-year-old child to come up with $2,000 to go to these events. When I was a kid, when I was going to these events, when I was a kid, all of the money that I raised to get to them, I raised myself. I don't come from money in my family. They helped out where they could, but for the most part, it was just me saving up my money. Maybe I'd snap off a pool tournament that, you know, helped me out a little bit here and there. But I drove to these events by myself. I bought the hotels there by myself. You know, I bought my food there by myself. And at some point in time, maybe just the qualifiers and stuff like that, maybe at some point in time, you can't ask them to do stuff like this. But even the first year that I was at this event in Rochester – we had to plug tables. They didn't even have the tables open for the kids. I remember having actually doing the speed pool. I actually had to pay $1 for the table so that I could do the speed challenge, the speed pool challenge. You can't ask. There's kids that are walking around there that are 5 and 6 years. I think the youngest kid that was there, I think at the time, was, I think, Tristan Hansen. I think he was 6 years old. He's a Twin Cities guy, so you may actually have heard of him. But he was like 6 years old, and he's walking around with a change full of quarters because he has to – every single time you play a match, you got to plug $1 and quarters into the table. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
From there on out, they were switched over to greens fees. But, I mean, you're still paying $40 in greens fees, which is just absolutely mind-boggling to me that these organizations – are going to run a pool tournament and then profit off of eight to 12-year-old kids. It just blows my mind how that works.
Yeah. I mean, I can just visualize a 6-year-old kid carrying a pocket full of quarters around and again, you know, it's a buck a pop. You're playing speed pool. What, the game lasts, you know, minutes and then you got to do it again. I mean, you can go through a lot of money plugging machines at one of the plugging tables at one of those tournaments. There's no doubt about it. What I like to do here on the show, Nate, is ask people about their first experience with the game, because every pool player's got a story of some kind, and usually they're pretty interesting. So, do you remember, you know, your first instance with the game and how you first discovered the game of pool?
Yeah. So I don't actually remember like my first time hitting a ball or anything like that. I actually started when I was about 4 years old, and my family played it. So I lived two houses down from my grandparents, who had a table in their basement. And the way that my family spent time together was playing pool, but they didn't play pool in like the traditional sense. Like, my uncle, my grandpa, and my dad would always play this game called golf. So for the first about a year of my life of playing pool, and they would never let me play with them. So I wasn't able to actually play pool with them until I was actually probably close to like 13 or 14 years old. They would never let me play with them. But what I would do is I would always follow my dad over, and I would watch them play pool. And at the end of it, you know, after they'd played their 2, 3, 4 games of pool, which actually I'm going to get into in a second, then my dad would hang around. He'd play maybe a game or two with me in the same style, and then we would leave. So my first memories of was actually watching pool, because my family didn't let me play with them until I was older. But the game that they played was a game called golf. And I actually didn't play 8-ball really for the first time until probably a year to maybe even 2 years into playing pool. The only game that I knew in pool was a game called golf. And for anybody who's not familiar with the game of golf, it's basically you lag the ball, you lag for order. So you can have as little as 2 people and as many as, I guess, there's really no cap. I mean, you can have as many as you want playing this game. And the idea is you lag for order. So whoever shoots first through whatever, let's say there's 5 people in the game, you lag for first through fifth. Whoever has the best lag goes first. Whoever has the worst lag goes fifth. And then you spot up your ball. So each person has their own individual ball and a cue ball. And you spot up your ball on the spot, and you have to take ball in hand in the kitchen, and you have to basically make all six of the pockets in order. So you have to go into what's called the one hole, which is, it's kind of dependent on how you play it. But for us, it was the top in the kitchen. It was the bottom left corner. And then once you made that pocket, you have to make the other corner on the same side of the table. And then you had the side middle, and you basically go around the table in a counterclockwise fashion until you made the last pocket, which was the opposite or the same side of the middle as you're on to begin with your first hole. So that's basically the game of golf. And it's a very defensive game, right? Because you're always following one person, and that person's job is to make sure that you don't have a shot to be able to make your hole and make some more. But it's a very complex game, not only with the defensive side of things, but you're playing for one positional shot every single time you make a shot. So if you make your hole, you have to find a way to get your cue ball into a position where you can make the next hole, because you don't know how often you're going to get an offensive shot. You might only get an offensive shot 1 out of every 20 times you enter the table. And that's part of the game where you always have to be watching out for the person that goes after you so that they don't have a shot to be able to make their pocket and run a couple more pockets. So that's kind of the game of golf. It's a really interesting game. There's a lot of defense in there. There's a lot of positional play. There's a lot of banking and kicking. And it's a really, really cool game, especially to play for money, where every time that you foul, there's no repercussions for fouling unless you make your pocket and scratch, and then you don't get credit for it. If you ever foul and make your pocket, you don't get credit for it. But there's no repercussions for actually fouling, except if you gamble. And if you gamble, then you can basically, every time you foul, you put a quarter under the rail or a dime under the rail or something like that. And then whoever wins the game gets all of the money on the table. Sometimes it's $5. Sometimes I've seen it as many as like $70 when people are playing for quarters. And you get stuck in a game that takes, I've seen these games take like 2 hours before when you have 6-7 people. Every time you foul, you got to put a quarter under the rail, and it adds up fast. So it's a really cool game. It's a really interesting game, especially on a big table or on a snooker table.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I've mostly seen it played, is on a snooker table. And so that's interesting. The first time that's a story you don't often hear, especially in this area, Wisconsin area, Minnesota area, Midwest area. Mostly people are exposed to the game through 8-ball in some way, shape, or form. But you were exposed to the game with golf. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and that's the only game that I basically knew for about the first year, besides just throwing up balls and hitting them. Sometimes I would hang out afterwards, and it was – I don't know what it was. It was a passage of rite or something like that, to where my family wouldn't let me play with them for the first, like, 10 years. Every now and then, like on a birthday or something like that, they'd let me play one game with them. You know, if it was my birthday or something happened where I needed to get rewarded or something like that, they'd let me play one game with them or something like that, but – I know that I was always just absolutely ecstatic and the happiest kid in the world whenever they'd let me play with them. But, yeah, I just never really got to play with them until, I was probably 14 or 15. And by then I was a way significantly better player than both my grandpa and my uncle. My dad was actually a very good player, so I didn't actually surpass him until I was maybe 16 or 17. And maybe even a little bit later than that. He actually was a very good player. But they wouldn't let me play, and it was always exciting to get to play. But yeah, that's how I was exposed to the game of pool.
Wow, that's kind of fascinating that you learned the game of billiards in regards to the game of golf, and not many people can say that, especially in this area. You know, mostly people learn the game surrounding 8-ball or 9-ball or what have you. And speaking of that, let's fast forward here a little bit.
You took fourth place in the ACUI National Championships, and previous episode guest and co-host of your show, Rob Hovick, won that championship in 1980 with the University of Minnesota Duluth. And you were attempting to become the fourth member of the University of Wisconsin to win that tournament, because in 1937 and 1940, John Miller did it. And in 1972, Andrew Tennant did it. And you just mentioned that you graduated or about to graduate from the University of Wisconsin here with another college degree. And so I don't think a lot of pool players are really familiar with the process of that whole event and how that works. And so, you know, Rob Hovick touched on it very little. He just told stories about playing the games in the event. But how did you get involved in that? And if somebody is a college age pool player right now, what avenues do they need to go through to get entered in for the ACUI?
I don't mean to be disrespectful. It's almost a funny question, because to this day, I still don't know how anything that happens with ACUI. That's another. So ACUI is a great organization ran by great people who have no idea how to market, or they don't have a platform to market. I'm that's probably disrespectful, but it's absolutely true. I had no idea that ACUI even existed.
Yeah.
Even when I was at their very first pool tournament, I still had no idea what it was. So basically how I figured out about it was I just showed up to the union and hit a couple balls. I think I had just finished a midterm on a Friday night, and I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. I didn't have any, I've never been a huge partier. So on a Friday night, I'm like, well, you know, what sounds like a great distressor? Let's go hit some balls at the local pool union. And I went down there, and the guy that runs it, his name's the union of Madison. His name's Bob Wright. Bob Wright, I think. And he's not a pool player. He has no idea. You know, he doesn't even know which end of the pool cue to use to hit the balls with. But he saw me he watched me, and actually he was mad at me because I was using blue chalk. It's red felt, and he comes over to me and he's like, "You can't use blue chalk on here." And I'm you know, hitting balls around. I'm like, and I just kind of like laugh in his face. I'm like, "You're kidding, right?" He's like, "No, it makes it felt look bad." And I'm like, "Okay, I've been here playing for an hour. Where does it look bad?" And he kind of walks around the table and looks at it and he analyzes it. And he's like, he found this little tiny little like a speck of like a chunk of blue chalk that just had fallen off the tip or something like that. He's like, "Look right here." So I walk over there and I just like brush my finger on it and it was gone. And he's like, "I don't care. You still can't use it." And I'm like, "Okay." I go put it back. I go put it on my case. And when he walks away, I just grab and start chalking again because the guy has no idea what he's talking about. He's going to come over and try to tell me how to, you know, how to handle pool tables. His tables are completely, you know, garbage. He doesn't know how to clean them or take care of them at all. And I always clean the table pretty much before I start playing on it. I'll wipe the rails down, stuff like that, get it ready for play. And he comes over later on, and he just watched me play. And he comes over, and he's like, "Okay, you clearly know what you're doing. I'm not going to tell you you can't use your chalk anymore because you know what you're doing. There's an event coming up in a week and a half from now, and it's at the University of Milwaukee, and I think you should play in it." And this was the ACUI qualifier. I had no idea what it was. I just thought it was like some tournament between the U.S. or the University of Wisconsin and the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. So I'm like, okay. He gives me the details on it, and I show up, and I end up actually playing a Madison College guy, which is just a small community college in Madison, in the finals. And I ended up winning the match. I won the tournament, and the tournament director comes up to me afterwards, and they're like, "Okay, we need all of your information." And I'm like, "For what?" They're like, "You just qualified for nationals." I'm like, "Oh, neat. Okay." So I wrote down all my information, and I just didn't really think anything of it because I still had never heard of it. And so I got an email about a month before the event starts, and it's like all the information that I need to go there. A month before, I won this probably 4 or 5 months before, and I got the information that I needed a month before. So I'm like, "Oh, well, here it is. I guess I have it now. I guess I'll just go." And it was at Virginia Tech, Blacksburg, and Virginia Tech, which is in Blacksburg, Virginia. Book everything up, go out there, play in it. And I guess the point I'm getting at is even the college, you have no idea what's going on. Nobody has any – it's ran by people who barely play pool. At the time, it was actually ran by a woman, Betsy Sutherland, who actually is very, very – not Betsy Sullivan. I don't remember her last name, just Betsy. And she was amazing. She actually was a good pool player. She just was overwhelmed with the amount of work that it took to put on these events in a professional type of way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I ended up going out there. I ended up taking fourth. I had no chance of, the best I could have done was third. Landon Shuffett ended up winning, and Landon Shuffett, here's a story about Landon Shuffett. If anybody's ever heard of him, he's probably like a 740 to 760 Fargo, somewhere in there. I don't have it offhand, but it's somewhere in between there. And the second year at Nationals, he was there again and he won it again. And Shariq Sayed, who was actually on the Singaporean World Cup of Pool team. So he's a professional out of Singapore. He's the second best player in all of Singapore. He's like a 780 Fargo or something like that. He comes up to me after the event. He had just lost to Landon for the second year in a row. And he's like, I officially can't stand this kid. I hate him so much. And for anybody who knows Lindenwood, they both go to Lindenwood University. That was ran by Mark Wilson, who is a Wisconsin guy, actually. He's from Madison originally, but he was the U.S. captain for the Moscone Cup for, I believe, 8 years. So he's a big deal, basically, is what I'm getting at. He's a big deal, and he coaches these kids. And Sharik comes up to me after this event. He's like, "Landon hasn't touched his pool cue for over 2.5 months. He picked up his pool cues to come to this event because Mark Wilson made him, and he ran through the field. I had to play him in the quarters, the semis. I had to play him in the semis, and he ran a six-pack on me, having not touched a pool cue in 2.5 months. That's how talented this kid is. So whenever Rob makes fun of me that he won nationals and I didn't, I just tell him, "Yeah, but you didn't have to play against Landon." And that makes me feel better for about 2 seconds, and then I just get sad again. Rob likes to rub it in. But I mean, there's great players that show up to this. It's just, it's impossible. And to this day, I don't actually know. I mean, there's a Facebook group for ACUI stuff, but I mean, when I was in Madison, I was trying to find out information to where I could qualify if I wanted to go, because I still have 1 year of eligibility left, and I couldn't find anything. And I mean, I didn't search that hard, but it's just another thing in pool. That's a great idea. It's a great concept. There's just lack of funding that goes into it.
Yeah, exactly. And to your point, in the very, you know, little research I did leading up to our conversation here, I mean, there was nothing. I couldn't find anything about that organization. I mean, you know, there's a website, but it doesn't really tell you anything. And then, you know, you Google it and whatever, you know, most things pop up and you get something. But with this, there's really nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just another perfect example of honest intentions in the game of pool that just lead to nothing for lack of funding or lack of motivation in the grand scheme of things. Whatever it is, it's just another idea that kind of just went by the wayside for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, one thing that didn't go by the wayside is your show. It's the Cue It Up podcast. You can find it. Well, tell our listeners where you can find it. You can find this thing on any place you can listen to a podcast, pretty much, right?
Yeah, so I originally put it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Spotify, is that right? Is that right? Spotify,
yep.
Is that a thing?
Yep.
Okay. I put it on those, and then next thing I know, it's people are, you know, I get these statistics of where people are listening from, and they're starting these pocket casts, and I don't even know what they are. They just show up there. People are listening to them. I'm like, I never gave you my RSS feed. How are you listening to it here? And somehow my podcast ends up getting spread all over the place. So I have yet to find one place. Every now and then I'll hear of a new podcast forum, and I'll just, out of curiosity, download the app and go over and look. And my podcast has been on every single one of them. So I'm yet to find one where the podcast isn't found.
Right.
It's also found on queuituppodcast.com, so, which is my website for it.
Yeah, there you go. Check it out on queuituppodcast.com. And yeah, the whole thing with the podcasting, I've noticed the same thing. You get these numbers that come in, you look at them, and one of them was, I think it's called podcastnotes.com, and you go on there, and they actually have all the descriptions, of course, of each episode, but they take it and categorize it. So you can, you know, the people who have been on your show, they categorize it, and then if they've been on any other show or if you've been on any other show, it will link it together. So when somebody clicks on your name or that person's name or that topic even, it will pull up all the podcasts that relate to that.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that. I've got to check this out. This sounds like fun.
It's kind of a slick little deal. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, there's a million podcast platforms out there. And it's amazing. Like you're saying, every week or so I see a new one that pops up, and it's like, all right, yeah, great. I mean, so I don't know how these sites, you know, like you say, get the RSS feeds and whatever, but they do. And so, make sure you check out his podcast, Cue It Up. I really appreciate you taking some time. I know you're busy. I know you got a lot going on. So, for you to, support the show like you have and come on and talk with me for a little over an hour here has been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a blast. I mean, anybody who's going to end up doing stuff, and I kind of covered it earlier, but I do want to highlight it one more time. The amount of work that Nick does into these events, into these podcasts, I know because I do it. It's insane the amount of work that goes into these things. Again, a like, a follow, a share, little things like that, maybe buying a sticker. These things are not, well, especially the buying swag items. That stuff's really important too, not only because it's a nice little ego boost when you see somebody walking around in your shirt, but it's also these things aren't free. There's hosting site fees. It costs money to just use the software to edit the audio. I mean, there's a lot of little things that go into making a podcast, and a $4 sticker, $5 sticker that, you know, he's only profiting maybe $2 on that, maybe $3 if he's got some sweet deal with whoever it is. Little things like that, it's just a tiny little bit of money out of your pocket, but it makes a difference that you're not doing a podcast to help promote pool at a loss. I can't emphasize that enough. Little things like that make the world of difference. If you like what they're doing and you want to see them, you know, continue doing it, little things like that are usually the deciding factor between whether or not they go hard at it, or whether it just kind of slowly dwindles away and it's gone.
Same thing to any podcast. I mean, we're talking a lot about our podcast, but anything like that that you listen to, and maybe people don't realize, you know, what goes into it. And especially, you know, if you know, like on my show, there's a few sponsors and stuff like that. And in the past on your show, you had sponsors. And again, we should maybe plug your Patreon account before you go. If you want to support Nate's show, find him on Patreon, and he's got all these different tiers and different perks that you get for being a supporter of his show. And those types of things help too. But I don't think that, again, people realize how much goes into it. So thank you again for highlighting that. And I appreciate it.
Yeah. And with the negativity that's out there in the world today, a little like or share every now and then goes a long ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Nate, I appreciate it. Thank you again for coming on the show, and we'll talk soon, buddy.
Absolutely. I hope you stick with this and maybe even take on a couple new projects. I love what you're doing.
All right, so there you have it, Nate Mindum Cue It Up podcast. And I gotta say one more time, the event that he put together, the Cue It Up Cup, the first one and the second one, very well done. I encourage you to check those two events out if you haven't, and stay tuned because he gave us a little bit of a spoiler on what's possibly to come, a draft style Cue It Up Cup 3. So that is something really to look forward to, especially if you've been following along and you're already a Cue It Up listener. That's going to be pretty darn cool. And I thought it was interesting that Nate began his life in pool based upon the fact that he was playing the game of golf. Now, that is something you don't hear very much. And I mentioned that to him in the conversation. You know, normally, especially in our area, you're exposed to the game in the form of 8-ball. And he was exposed to it with a very complex version of billiards. So that has to go into, you know, I'm sure that still sticks with him a little bit as far as strategies and defensive play transferring into 9-ball and 8-ball and other games. And so, that could have been something we dove into a little bit more as fact of how that translated to his game today and how that was and how he was able to apply those skills that he learned at an early age into the rest of his repertoire. And, you know, he's got to be a very well-rounded player when you think about the fact that he is a 2-time national junior speed pool champion. So, I mean, you're firing away at a fast pace, very quick, not a lot of cerebral thinking. There is, I'm sure, but not as much as there would be in a defensive game like golf. So he's got a background in that. He's got a background in speed pool. And then, you know, what we didn't talk about was the fact that he's a 3-time team Masters champion in the state of Wisconsin as well. So he is a well-rounded player as far as, you know, he's playing multiple games at multiple levels and excelling at all of those. So just goes to show you, like we've talked about here on the show in the past, the more games you play, the more well-rounded and the more you continue to improve. Because as long as you continue to see the game in a different light and change your thinking of the game, as Mike Miller said on this very show, that's a way that you can continue to improve. And I think that's a prime example of doing that. So again, really thank Nate for coming on the show. And again, just to give you a quick update, website is still plugging along. We've got a very fun announcement that may make its way to the public at the end of the week here in regards to apparel. And that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to give any more away. So stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for the release of episode 10 in our Legend series of interviews where we'll talk with Daryl Fredrickson on that episode. And in another edition of our Diamond Cutters segment, we're going to be joined by Thomas Van Eck, creator and founder of IQ Training Cue Balls. And let me tell you right now, he's got a lot to say, and he's got a lot of good things to say, and he does a lot of great things for his local communities, boys and girls clubs, and different things, and he fits into the Diamond Cutter category perfectly, and he's got a training cue ball for you that might help your game. So stay tuned for all that and more on episode 10 of our Legend series of interviews. That's coming in a few days right here on this very podcast feed. Make sure you like, share, favorite, everything you can do, and tell your friends about the show. And with that being said, we'll talk at you later. And don't forget, chalk is cheap.
people are really funny. I don't know if you knew that or not. They're really cool. My cat's going crazy.
Time sure flies during a quarantine, but I'll tell you one thing. If you get sick and tired of starting that old mower up like I do, or if you got a gigantic yard and you just say enough is enough, I know the guy that is the man for the job. And that's Joe Olson of Olson Lawn Care. So pull out that phone of yours and call 218-591-0776. That's 218-591-0776. So you can sit back, crack a cold one, rip open a bag of potato chips, or sip on a spritzer, and finally enjoy the sound of this. Hey, whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, or a master, there's a few things that we know matter most. And that's shooting on pool tables that have quality cloth, good cushions, and being able to shoot pool in a quality environment. If you're looking for that place, then look no further than Top Hat Tavern at 705 Tower Avenue in Superior, the home of the Diamond Table and the only business in the Twin Ports that has a three-cushion billiards table. Jeff and the gang have you covered for all of your pool shooting needs. So it's Top Hat Tavern, Tower Avenue in Superior, and don't forget to tell them that Nick sent you.